Right now, we wonder if the Nashville Music Council will hit all the right notes, or if it's just going to be a bunch of annoying noise. And Nashville gets Arbitron's personal people meters, and radio stations all over the mid-state await their fate. Plus, Prince is convinced the internet is over. But don't tell this guy.
It's a double rainbow all the way.
Whoa! Oh my God! Oh my God!
All that and more on this, episode 22 of the Nashville Tech Feed.
Woo!
To the Batmobile!
Crazy person!
Are you pondering what I'm pondering?
You're excited! Feel these nipples!
You have some mighty interesting people online.
No! Turn it on! Turn it back on!
Welcome to episode 22 of the Nashville Tech Feed, the show that dives into tech news from Nashville and that affects Music City. Everything you need to know about the show is at NashvilleTechFeed.com. You can also leave us a voicemail at 615-280-0505. This week, we're focusing on music business, but first, let's meet our fantastic panel. The returning champion, independent journalist, and instructor at Belmont University's Media Studies Department, Lucas Hendrickson. Hello,
Does a belt come with this? Do I get some sort of trophy? I'm confused as to what the prize is for being the returning champion. But thank you, Dave. Appreciate it.
That would be the old CMT belt buckle award that they give out.
Oh, wow. Those are such prized. They still do that one. It's the flame worthies that they no longer do. So, yeah, the plexiglass trophy of country music. So, interesting.
Yes. Our other panelist is In the Center Square, author of the book The Boy Who Invented Television, internet entrepreneur, and founder of Cohesion Art, Paul Shatskin.
And I love this job so much that I would do it even if I wasn't being paid.
Well, good, because you're not. And finally, we have Craig Havinghurst, who is a music journalist and music documentary producer who founded his production company String Theory Media in 2005. He's the author of Air Castle of the South, WSM, and The Making of Music City. He's also the co-host of Music City Roots Live from the Loveless Cafe on WSM, and a blogger, which is phenomenal blogs, I have to say, who can be found at stringtheorymedia.com, and a returning co-host. Welcome back, Craig.
Hi, Dave. Hello, fellas. Thanks very much.
Hi, Craig.
Happy to be here.
Well, I have been looking so forward to get you guys all back together again, because when it comes to music and technology, you guys are probably the biggest geeks that I know. And to get you together to talk, I might just sit back and let you guys talk the entire episode.
Oh, surely not.
Don't tempt Lucas.
The ladies just tuned out. Thanks a lot.
Actually, according to our rigorous analytics and anecdotal studies, apparently female listeners is all we have. So, but we can delve into that a little bit later, I suppose.
Yeah, she is attractive. I will say that.
Our fan base, yes.
Yeah,
all of two,
all two of them.
Well, this episode is going to be like intriguing and twists and turns, and hopefully we don't irritate too many people. So, with that, the first topic I'm going to hand off to Mr. Craig, because he was there, he has written about it, and he's a much more, orator than I? So, Craig, first topic, please.
The Nashville Music Council. Sounds kind of Star Chamberish, doesn't it?
Yes.
This is an entity that was launched and announced just over a year ago, spring of 2009, by the mayor, Mayor Carl Dean, who had for some time been interested in trying to figure out a way to position himself as a supporter and believer and backer of the Music City brand and Music City idea. And I think he says that he was motivated by the presence of music councils or music commissions in Texas, in Seattle, in Louisiana. And these other entities have acted a little like recruiting organizations, a little like the film commissions that try to get movies made in their states. In some places, I think there's some modest tax incentives to take your music business to, say, places like Austin. But he set up the music business, the music count, National Music Council, and he didn't put business in it, which is kind of interesting and nice, to bring together leaders in a sort of roundtable way to cultivate the and sort of decide what needs to be cultivated in order to cultivate Music City and keep this reportedly $6 billion with a B billion per year industry thriving at a time when it's obviously pretty challenged. And the 50 or so members include people you would expect, major label leaders like Joe Galante, Tim Dubois, who's just recently joined ASCAP after a distinguished career as a producer and founder of Arista Records, the heads of all the associations in town, including Americana and Bluegrass and Country Music Association, Steve Buchanan from Gaylord. Kind of what you expect, some maybe unusual picks in artists like Jack White and Emmylou Harris, who what's a little unclear as to how involved they are on a, you know, on a regular basis, but they lent their name and credibility to this effort. And so a couple of weeks ago, after a year of pretty much silence, the National Music Council held a public forum at the W.O. Smith School and essentially had sort of a coming out party to say, here's what we've been doing for this past year. They've had maybe a half a dozen meetings as a full council and many more meetings broken up into four kind of committees and work groups. And those cover branding, the Music City brand, and recruitment, business recruitment is one. One is kind of a little bit vaguer, kind of creating a friendly city for creatives, kind of what would it take to attract entrepreneurs and creative individuals to make them want to come and stay. There's a live music committee looking into a new amphitheater and mid-sized venues that we may lack, and a music education committee, which has made a lot of progress in starting a major and maybe unprecedented survey of the city's music education resources and its public school programs and its public-private partnerships with the mission of making Nashville the world's leading public education system with respect to music. And that is a noble and admirable goal. So we got reports from four different committee chairs, including our pal Mark Montgomery on the branding and committee. And I can go into a little more detail. I wrote about it, but a couple of you guys were there. And maybe before I go on, I'll sort of ask for your impressions of what you thought that this council can accomplish, or if it's doomed to ceremonial status forevermore, because that's what these things always become, you know, in the cynical view.
Paul? That's more cynical than I have actually been about this. I was greatly encouraged by the entire experience, what I witnessed at the rollout that you're describing. It just seemed to me there were two or three things that stuck with me coming out of that. The first was Mary McCready's list of the number of businesses that you wouldn't think of that are somehow involved in the periphery of the music business. We think of the music business as being the labels and maybe the studios and the agencies that run the tours and the management companies. But she started drilling down to the companies that make the guitar cases and the companies that handle the cartage for the tours and the companies that make the felt that line the guitar cases. And when she drilled down through it all, you really got a sense of what a prominent presence the music industry is on levels that you would not ordinarily think of when you think of the music industry, because you tend to only think of the most visible aspects of it. So that was one takeaway that I got from that I thought was very interesting. The second was I was very intrigued and pleased to hear the emphasis on music education. And I thought that that really lays a much stronger foundation for the role that music will have, not only locally, but globally. So the idea that Nashville would be a music education center as well as a music production and distribution center, I thought was an important component to see added to that whole discussion. And the third thing that I found the most intriguing was just one statement that came out of the video piece that Joe Galante said. There was a long video, and numerous luminaries who were involved in this panel, like Emmy Lou Harris and Tim Dubois and Kix Brooks, names that you would recognize right away, were in the video. And Joe Galante, who's been a major executive in the music industry for decades, made the statement that the music industry in the future will be a large collection of cottage industries. That's the expression that he used. And I thought it was very surprising to hear that kind of terminology coming from Joe Galante, who's somebody who has built a career of large institutional music businesses. But I think that he's right, and it was very interesting to hear that coming from him.
Absolutely. Lucas, what was your thought?
I will cycle back and following up on your last statement, say I'm every bit as cynical that it will become a mainly ceremonial kind of thing. But I hope it won't. I will echo what Paul said about the music education thing. That was my biggest takeaway, because I think that's the thing that the general public would most be able to wrap their arms around and understand, if not support. You know, we've seen what the recent support has been for arts in the schools. But as far as something that hopefully, as the story of this particular council continues to be told, that the general public will get this, will understand that this is a valid goal for this quasi-governmental body to be trying to do. You know, I was also impressed or slightly not troubled, but you know, the list of the multitude of businesses that are peripheral and important to the music industry that was introduced, it kind of made it sound like that they were surprised that there was gambling going on in this establishment. So, you know, yes, there are all of those kind of things, and every single one of those types of businesses needs to be uncovered, supported, patronized, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And hopefully this group will be able to help continue a move towards that. As far as the branding of Music City and the recruitment efforts for creatives to move here, how much of that do we really need? Most people who are wanting to be involved in the commercial music business in this country realize that Nashville is a great place to try to attempt to do that. How much, you know, governmental support does that truly need going forward? I don't know. It's easier for the film and music commissions of other places that can try to, you know, entice single identifiable projects to their regions. That's an easier nut to kind of crack than trying to continue to bolster a $6 billion business.
And I see two glaring omissions from their self-designed mandate. And one of them is broadcasting and attending to the elephant in the room, or the elephant that left the room in about 2000, which was TNN used to pump Nashville's brand and its artists and interviews and performance to the nation on a very easily accessed cable channel 24/7 for about 20 years. And it was those 20 years when you saw country music achieve levels in the marketplace it never has. And the guy who founded TNN will claim to this day that there's no coincidence that the trajectory of country music sales and credibility and records and concert touring and so forth, you know, goes hand in hand with TNN viewership. And there has not been, since TNN left the stage, a network or a show or anything that really put Nashville's day-to-day miracle of its wide, deep talent pool out there for public consumption. And, you know, with the possible exception of some of the locally developed or the locally hosted satellite radio channels, which have a Nashville feel, if not explicitly branded to Nashville. And the other one was no discussion about talent development and who are the talent development and investment entities going to be. I know that some of the people on the council are very concerned about this and talk about it all the time. But, you know, recruiting businesses to Nashville is one thing if they are the guys who make the latches for the road cases or but who's you know, where are the better mousetraps? Where are the entities that are going to do what record labels used to do, which was invest in talent and carry them along through the twists and turns and pitfalls and minefields of being heard, discovered, and getting better. I think one of the things that I really struck me out of writing the WSM book was that in early days, radio, live radio, was so much more than just entertainment for people. They were the entities that paid musicians even a little bit, but they paid them regularly to come back week after week and be on their show. And over years, they would let them build up an audience and build up fan base. And, you know, back in the day, it was like WSM put an unknown Dinah Shore on the air. And 4 years later, she graduates, as it were, goes to New York and becomes the, you know, the nation's top favorite new singing talent on the NBC network. And for independent musicians who might play the off, you know, the sort of niche genres or no genre at all, there's not that those mechanisms are failing and falling apart, and there's not a whole lot coming along to replace it. I didn't see enough attention to that.
But can I?
Well, no. Somebody.
Let me put a question out there, and this kind of, I'm probably the one the least familiar with it, except for I used to work at the Country Music Association, and that's really what the Country Music Association was created for, was the fear that when rock radio came out, that all the country stations were switching to rock. And through my experience, they've lost their goals. They've lost their mission. And they have a board of 50 to 60 people that are supposed to represent every aspect of the country music side of the music industry here. And on top of that, it seems like they've gotten to the point where the CMA could have been spending a lot more focus on helping out the smaller independent artists get there where the industry was beginning to fail in that aspect. What about the idea that, okay, if this thing, if the council gets off the ground and it gets going, what prevents it from becoming the next big organization that just takes care of its own people that have the most vested into it, such as the major corporations in the industry?
Well, I think the presence of somebody like Mark Montgomery on the council in a leadership position there is an antidote, perhaps, to what you're suggesting, because he comes from a very entrepreneurial kind of background, and he's been involved on the Entrepreneurs Council, the National Technology Council's Entrepreneur Center. So there is a different influence there, and what I'm thinking about as I hear Craig and Lucas talking about, for example, TNN. Craig, you were talking about TNN being another forum for country music, and having lost that country, the curve of country music has declined. But there seems to be a larger potential focus to this idea of the Music Council, and it's this often raised idea that there's much more to Nashville's music community than simply country music. That Nashville is actually misserved or disserved by the overemphasis on country music here now. That there's so much more going on here that if we keep coming back to it's a center of country music, it's really underserving the potential of Nashville to be recognized as a universal music center.
There has been a huge emphasis on that, and it's been really interesting, and it'll be fascinating to watch how that plays out over the next year, because it's a double-edged sword, I guess, if that's the right old metaphor. In bending over backwards to be perceived as more than country, not just country, there has been a tendency for entities like the Chamber of Commerce, which is the Convention and Visitors Bureau, which has the most overt role of presenting Nashville to the world and having their website and their audio issues there.
Yes. Anyway, again, Craig.
And just my example, my example I've been going back to over the last few weeks about the danger, sort of the thing to be aware of, is that the Convention Visitors Bureau website right now has rock artists and soul artists and some country songwriters and some really nice, unusual, really good talent there portrayed with lovely photographs. But there is not a fiddle or a banjo or a dobro or a mandolin anywhere in sight. And my fear is that in playing the, hey, we've got Kings of Leon and Paramore and Keisha and artists that are will surprise you because it's not just country, that the thing that really Nashville is best at in the world, which is actually Americana, people come here to tap into the vibe of Chris Christopherson, Johnny Cash, Emmylou Harris. I meet these artists all the time. They're making some of the most original and wonderful and critically acclaimed music in the city. And they want that tradition celebrated. They want to be modern and reverent toward anything from Roy Acuff and the really old school country to world music and world folk and things like that. So it's going to be interesting how this entity and the related entities sell the story of Nashville as one that has all these flavors. And I know that Americana, the Americana Association, and the Bluegrass Association, of which I'm a member, I'm on the board of IBMA, but there has been some degree of tension and struggle from those organizations saying, hey, we've got events in the fall. We've got these conventions and these big fan-oriented events, big festivals that we want the world to know about. And because we have country content, is anybody going to help us tell our story? And the CMA is still getting a great deal of support from the city in terms of the hotel tax that goes to a city event marketing fund that is helping them to the tune of nearly $1 million each year. So it's going to be interesting to watch that one.
So are you saying that music like bluegrass and Americana tend to get lumped into country? And so when country is being disregarded, they wind up going out with the bathwater?
Well, I think so. And it's kind of ironic because bluegrass and Americana are where, you know, old country, the sort of classic country musical values have migrated as country music, quote unquote, has become kind of this industrial hybrid product that is sort of hovering perilously close to Miley Cyrus territory. And yeah, it may be the baby, the bathwater that gets thrown out with the baby in some cases. Mm-hmm. And I'm not saying that's happened on some methodical way. There's not a conspiracy, but it's the first thing I've noticed about something that made me go, about whether the council has this holistic, where Music City is all music, approach.
Well, it feels in a lot of ways like the pendulum. They're over swinging the pendulum. They're thinking that country will be able to tell its own story, you know, just by the word Nashville and by, you know, 3-hour award shows that happen in the spring and the fall. It can pretty much take care of itself. They want to try to swing it over to the other side. Here are the litany of rock acts that are having an amount of success right now. You know, Kings of Leon, quote unquote, the biggest rock band in the world in this moment, et cetera, et cetera. And you're right. There's a giant slice of the musical pie that completely gets swung by in that movement of the pendulum. So, but that's not an easy story to tell, and it's not going to be. It would not be as singularly easy as having some sort of dedicated video, you know, programming service. I loathe to say network anymore because those things don't exist. Yeah. But even those, the ones that already exist that do cater to the country music side, you know, we were loath to find anything in reaction to the flood when it happened on either GAC or CMT. These are multinational corporations that are just trying to put programming on the air, not necessarily get geared towards country music or music at all. So the idea that, you know, a music network of any stripe that focuses on Nashville in this moment, to me, seems like it's improbable.
Yeah, but if there's so many opportunities for channels. Let's not call them networks anymore, but for channels and aggregated ports of identity and content. You know, where's the Nashville X Prize where somebody offers $500,000 to the jury awarded best new Nashville music channel that combines live music, commentary, news, and reviews and events and interactivity. You know, where is a Nashville Yahoo emerging that can brand the cities, you know, make you feel like you're here and can, you know, virtually browse a night at the Basement, Third and Lindsley, or the Station Inn.
And maybe that's where the role of whatever technological side of the Music Council comes in. Again, in the discussion of the database of businesses and or entities and or musicians that was kind of brought up tangentially as part of this, if there's government dollars, if there's, you know, entrepreneur dollars, whatever, dedicated to building that sort of online presence, then that's great. And there's a lot of people that would be interested in doing that. Here's where, and I hesitate, and I don't want to call him out in the middle of this, but here's where Mark Montgomery's presence in this might deter some of these people from getting involved in that sort of effort. They might think, well, he's involved in it now. He's going to have it locked up with the people he already knows. Why should I get involved in it?
Well, again, because he's now looking for places to give money. I mean, he's representing a venture capitalist, and I think I predict they will fund several of those entities that 6 years from now will be going, hey, those were important footprints in Nashville.
Yeah, and I think that's an essential component of whatever identity Nashville is hoping to achieve for itself in the future, that there have to be allowances for the technological shifts that are taking place. You know, ideally there would be a high profile music tech entity that was based in Nashville that there is not right now. The irony is that the center of the digital music universe right now is in fact Silicon Valley or San Francisco or even places like Santa Monica where Topspin is headquartered. There really isn't a standout Nashville technology music media business that I can think of.
Well,
with
the possible
exception of String Theory Media.
Well, there was. Wasn't it LimeWire that was based here when it was...
LimeWire, wasn't that a file trading service?
Yes, that's what I'm saying.
Great. Yeah.
What a great city to start that. I'm sure they rolled out the
red carpet
for them.
Yeah.
Well, I would say on this, just quickly enough, this note is that the symbolic importance of inviting Jack White onto the Music Council, I think, says far more than just, wow, he's a cool rock star and it'll be great. The fact that he's got Third Man Records here is not an explicitly technology company, but it's a company that's in tune with the zeitgeist. And by emphasizing vinyl and high emotion products and high touch with their fan base, and the immediacy of we record it one weekend and turn the recording around in a month or less, and we have, you know, the art that's involved in the boutique store that somebody could put on their itinerary as they visited Nashville, that is inestimable. That is the kind of thing that is a plus, you know, home run for the city.
Mm-hmm. And I thought that his point was really well taken in the piece that you did with him on NPR. Suddenly I've gone Xylon.
Hello.
I'm sorry. I went Xylon there for a minute, but Jack made the point that he was, like you say, he's in the middle of that zeitgeist, and he is endeavoring mightily to find reasons for people to buy music.
Yeah.
So he understands what the changing paradigm is, that there are lots of ways now for people to get music without essentially buying it. So he's trying to focused on the context that gives reason and value to the music that makes it worth buying.
Overall, kind of wrapping this up, would you guys, like a 10-second thought to end with this, glass half empty on it, glass half full. What do you think the, you know, what's your 10 second perceptions of the Music Council? Go, Craig.
I'm very optimistic about it. I think they need to be transparent and continue those meetings. I would think that the best thing they could do would be to have that exact town hall meeting once a quarter for the public and the music business to come to get together and really have it out.
All right, Paul, what's your thoughts?
I think that there is the danger, as we started at the very beginning, that it could become your classic commission and just kind of fade into oblivion. But I also think that even if that happens, there are elements of it that will continue to make progress, in particular the educational component and the live performance component. I think that they will live on and produce results even if the grand scheme fails to materialize.
Okay, Lucas, 10 seconds.
I agree with Paul, and you know how much that frightens me. but no, especially on the music education thing. I hope if they find one aspect, one avenue of this that they're going to throw their might and their dollars into, that will be the one that truly gets their attention. Because if it works, it's going to be the thing that's going to capture the public's attention outside of Nashville, and that's going to be the new music center stamp that we can really hang our hats on.
Very good. I'm gonna take the pessimistic point of view, and maybe because I wasn't there and I didn't see the environment in the room, but from what I've been through with my previous job, it just seems when you have too many people trying to be involved in something like that, everybody seems to be involved for their personal interests, and then nothing gets done beyond the core of what they want to do. So I'm going to say half empty. I don't think we'll hear from them again. And it's sad. So I leave my I've said my say. Real quick, why don't we go do an ad, because we want to try to use the dreaded word monetize.
Let's have a word from our sponsors.
Word from our sponsor. Hold on. Let me bring up my notes on my trusty iPad. We have an affiliate account with Audible.com. If you go to NashvilleTechFeed.com/Audible, it'll take you right to Audible, where you can create an account, get one free book. You don't have to put, from what I remember, I don't have it up right now because I don't want to kill the bandwidth. Love you, Comcast. But you can get a free book, try it out. There's thousands of titles on Audible.com. You like it. You sign up, you can get a monthly subscription. I pay $21 a month. I get two books a month, and it doesn't. You get credits, and the book could be $50, and it's still a credit. It could be $9, and it could be a credit, and you'd lose money on that. But I highly recommend it, and if you want to support the Nashville Tech Feed, go to NashvilleTechFeed.com/Audible. All right, on to our next topic, guys. We've already run over, so we're going to just keep running. Radio digital ratings, or what is it called? PPM, portable people meters, are coming to Nashville, and we are the 44th market to get this high tech system that will be replacing the diary system. Pretty much, you would write down what you were listening to during the day, and that's how they based on who's rating in Nashville. And there is a big stink about it. Pretty much what people do is they get a little meter the size of a pager, and it just listens to what you're listening to. And they're saying, you know, the big stations in town that have been popular in the past could lose some massive, you know, listenership. But on the other aspect, some of the independent stations could gain a lot of listeners. And they're saying that what's at stake is 60 to 70 million a year spent on advertising in Nashville alone. So the question is, being music radio, or do we even listen to radio anymore? Anybody?
That was going to be my question. What is this radio thing of which you speak?
Oh, I listen to radio all the damn time.
So Craig,
couldn't live without it. Are you kidding?
Yeah, but what do you listen to?
I listen to WPLN, Nashville Public Radio, and mm-hmm. which is still my number one source of news. And when it's not convenient, I pull their you know, I mean, I go straight to NPR for podcasts, and WMOT, the jazz station out of Murfreesboro, and RVU out of Vanderbilt, which plays music that always surprises me in my car. And I expect that from most Americans, being in the car, radio is the first thing that they try. And if they don't find anything there, they'll pop a CD in. But if there's good radio, and I think in Nashville we have it, I probably listen to 12, 15 hours of radio a week.
So, Craig, do you think the digital people meters are going to benefit the stations that might not necessarily be the top most popular, such as one of the things I actually heard is that a lot of people say they listen to jazz, not saying that you do, but then they actually don't listen to it. It's more of a intellectual thing. Personally, I listen to podcasts all the time. Do you think it'll help the jazz station in town, or what do you think?
Yeah, I would love to believe it. I think that the way they send diaries and who says yes to doing the diary and says, wow, I got a dollar for keeping a diary, and then who keeps their diary, honestly, it's a deeply flawed system just on its face, and it forces all kinds of programming gimmicks and branding of the station that is absolutely obnoxious. There's a thing called aided recall where they have to tell you the call letters and the station ID 75 times an hour, even though you're like, I know what I'm listening to, you freaks. But they have to do it because it pounds the call letters in or the station brand, so that when the typical diary keeper fills in their diary at the end of the week, making up for all the missing of the hour to hour they're supposed to be doing, they go, oh, I remember those call letters. And so I would love to think so, but I also fear that it's Nielsen and Arbitron still, correct? I mean, that's
correct.
Doing
yes.
This.
Yes.
I fear that they have such an incentive in protecting the perceived integrity of their diary system that they're going to do everything in their power to make, to make these new statistics hew to the old ones in whatever they can do to show continuity. And I think that what I've read over the past few years is the industry telling me that the people meters are saying, oh, well, they just show almost no change. It's pretty much the same stuff we got from the diaries, which is a way of mollifying the sense of threat to the big branded stations. It's a way of saying, proving that their diaries were always right. And, really, guys, they're a big black box, and they have no interest whatsoever in telling the local market that WMOT out of Murfreesboro, the jazz station, is twice as popular as everybody thought they were. Mm-hmm. So I'm not sure we're gonna see anything very positive out of this.
Do we know if they are they just did a straight swap, that they went from diaries to people meters and that's it, or are they merging the two? Are they kind of just doing both, at least for the time being, to try to get a better idea of what the quasi reality of the marketplace is?
Well, according to the article, it was June 27th when it came out, and in the article it said they went live 3 days ago with several hundred panelists. It doesn't say whether it replaced it or not, but I don't know why they would do a dual. Maybe they would do a dual system, but technically if they're touting this as more accurate, why would they go back to the old? Why would they keep with the
old?
Well,
it'd be interesting. It'd be an interesting comparison to see what, an equal sized sample, or at least as close as they can get, diaries versus electronics would show them. Those numbers probably remain internal.
Yeah, I would love to see those numbers. I doubt we will ever get a chance.
No.
Well, the numbers, any numbers that are derived from a sample are always going to be imprecise and questionable. And so I'm just wondering why it matters that we're using one imprecise technology over another imprecise technology.
Well, here's something interesting that from the article, I'm just kind of pulling things that stand out in my mind.
And let's give credit where credit is due. This is a Tennessean article.
Well, yeah, definitely. But like I said, in Detroit, Breakfast Club morning show hosts Kevin O'Neill and Lisa Berry found themselves without a job in April when the Clear Channel-owned station switched from a music-intensive format after PPM ratings showed the formerly number one morning show was coming in at number 11.
Huh.
And that was a Clear Channel station. They lost their literally after the first ratings, they're gone.
Well, yeah, but from the same article, look at this good news. Sean Hannity show, for example, endured a 20% drop in listeners in some markets. Hmm. So it's a double-edged sword.
Well, and that's
that one's cutting positively, though.
Yeah, exactly.
In our minds.
In our minds, yes. And probably in the minds of at least half of our fan base. I don't know about the other one. But anyway, what I hope won't happen is more of that same sort of, double, whatever edged sword kind of thing, where companies and stations completely overreact to the numbers that they're going to see coming out of this. I've had a couple of decidedly off the record conversations with radio people in town, and they are nervous about the reaction that their corporate parents are going to have to the numbers that they will see the first time. This is, again, it's more probably people trying to keep their jobs more than anything else, but I think we'll see radical changes in formats, radical changes in air, day part talent, and probably needlessly. They need a little more time than just the first book to try to figure out what's really going on here, and yet we're going to see complete overreaction to it.
It'll be interesting. It really will. I'd actually like to see something more accurate and see some of the smaller stations. For example, Lightning 100, I would like them to really get a bump in ratings because there's more people out there, I believe, listen to them than really are saying that they are, or the traditional diaries are recording.
Yes, but how do you ascertain that people that listen to WRLT as opposed to some other station are getting these people meters and that their listenership is going to be recorded? It's still a representative sample. Who decides what the representative sample is going to be?
Paul, your faith in statisticians and demographers depresses me. It's a very proven science that with a small sample of randomly chosen and demographically accurate, representative people, you can learn a great deal about the nation's habits and preferences. Polling is real, so I believe in that part of it.
Well, whatever happens, it's going to be interesting to revisit the topic in a couple of months and see if something really does happen. For example, like the five conservative talk channels in Nashville, there can't be enough people listening to all those dang shows when Davidson County goes Democratic. I don't understand that, but that's another topic.
It'll take the emphasis on branding down a couple notches, because branding is what has led to diary keeping patterns. It's, if you can pound the brand in, they'll write the damn name down in the diary, and hopefully this will clean that problem up.
Absolutely.
Yeah, but you can't say that the overemphasis on branding, and certainly there are a ton of stations in town that are incredibly guilty of it, but they're not just doing it for the purposes of the 640 people or whatever that are keeping the diary in the marketplace. It's for that, hopefully person who's getting ready to get out of their car and they're hearing, something between when they're walking from the parking lot to their desk and are going to turn on a radio station there. Hopefully we will get less, and certainly we know of stations that are incredibly guilty of that. But I don't think that's just the only reason. But it goes back to the over-reliance on numbers and what's the word I'm looking for here? I can't remember it now.
I'd like to go back to the system where they judge the programs by the sacks of mail that came in.
Well, nowadays it would have to be Twitter and email, wouldn't it?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
how many times you can break the station's website?
Yeah, it doesn't make for as good a photo op as the old days when
not so much
guys could sit on their sacks of mail.
are there any statistics, or is there any consideration made for how many people might be listening to a station through an online stream as opposed to over the air? Is that included in any of these stats, or is that such a small consideration that it's not even worth a blip?
Oh, I think so, because the signal itself has the code embedded in it, and the code will carry wherever it goes. Mm-hmm. So you hear it online, you hear it in the car, and that's one of the purported advantages mm-hmm. of the people meter.
Yeah, because maybe we'll talk about this when we get to the last segment about consumption. But I've in the last couple of weeks shifted my at-home radio habits from over-the-air to Wi-Fi. So I'm suddenly using an entirely different source and expanding my the scope of what I'm exposing myself to that way. So
absolutely.
And in a way that is 100% trackable.
Someday yeah. we'll get there. Right now, we've burned through all of our time, guys. I don't even think we can get back to the last topic, which I so wanted to talk about.
Prince?
Which is Prince and how forward-thinking he is. Do you guys want to burn through that one real quick or go on to our final segment, which is the consuming?
Let's give it 5 minutes, and all I need is to quote Bob Lefschetz. Who said that when Prince said that the internet was over, Lefschetz says, quote, "I haven't seen an artist this out of touch since Metallica sued Napster," unquote.
I will say on this one that I have already come to terms with the death of print, and now I have to come to terms with the death of Prince, and that's complicated.
Touché.
Wow.
And see, I'm not even going to jump in on this because there are aspects of which I agree with him on that. But again, taking the headline kind of out of context, saying that the internet is completely over. Yeah, that's a little short-sighted. But there are other things in those statements, if you continue to read the story, that he's right about.
What was the kernel of truth?
I'm not going to... Well, let's see. I can't even remember where the original story is.
Well, while you're looking, one of the interesting things that I gleaned from that is that one of his biggest arguments is, well, I don't get paid up front for this. I don't get advances. And, well, that's the way it works now. You put something out, and when somebody buys it, you get money. I think the days of the huge advances to artists are gone. Would you not agree?
No. I don't know. I can't find the original story about about him. You know, the number of quotes that we're talking about. But I'm not going to burn on him because he has basically done what the rest of the marketplace tells us that we have the option to do. He has chosen for this particular project and this project alone, he has chosen his distribution model, and that's how it's going to be delivered. It's going to be online, you know, within however long it takes somebody who Daily Mail or Daily Mirror reader to get that disc and pop it in a CD and burn it and you know, throw it up on a torrent. But for the purposes of that particular project, he's chosen this distribution model, and God bless him.
I find it curious that he says that the internet is based on ones and zeros and completely throws it away. Like, internet, it's over. Game over, guys, sorry. But then he puts his music on a CD, which is based on ones and zeros, and delivers it via the post, which is... It seems like it's complete opposite of the way that things are going. If Prince was coming out...
It's slightly anachronistic, yes.
Well, if Prince was coming out today, if he was starting... Little baby Prince, you know, getting his first record deal, starting today, I don't think he would ever be to the point where he is now if he started out today.
But nobody is going to be in the place that he got to. It doesn't matter. You can have all the talent in the world, and the way the marketplace is right now, you're never going to get to that place of musical superstardom that anybody has experienced to this point before. We're not going to have those any longer. And there are ways in which I feel as a society and as music fans that we are less for that. But that's just probably just me.
Oh, by the way, I just downloaded it off of BitTorrent. Do you guys want it?
Not particularly.
Kidding. RIAA, kidding. I did not do it. I don't have it. We'll just leave it at that since we'll move on to the next segment, guys, which is we have voicemail, Lucas.
Hey,
hold on.
Somebody actually heard us and responded to the fact that we have an actual phone number, 615-280-0505.
Yes.
I got that right, didn't I? Yeah.
Yes, you did get that right. We could do the Boogle voice translation, but it's so horribly bad, I don't even want to torment our listeners, two of them, for it. What's that? Is that yours?
Not me.
That's you? Who's ringing? That's Paul.
Sorry, guys. Somebody answer the phone. Okay.
Well, let's play our listener and see what she has to say. This is 50% of our audience, so here we go.
Oh, how cute that you're bribing the fan base to call in with quotes from the Big Lebowski. That's really very sweet of you. Quick favor, though. Please, you know, continue doing what you're doing by all means, but please do not do what Lightning 100 does and have everybody just tweet random songs, because that's annoying as hell. So yeah, you know, need to have Kato back on. Talk to you later. Bye.
So there we go, our one listener.
Okay, two points there. I wasn't aware that we were taking requests. And we haven't had Kato on, so I don't know how we can have Kato on again, but you know, she's again like our Jimmy Kimmel, our Matt Damon on Jimmy Kimmel. You know, we'd love to have her on.
Her Skype is fixed. She will be on. She might actually be the first on an iPad on, and it won't be Paul Schatzkin the first.
We're waiting
for
somebody.
How could that have happened?
I don't know. Well, but yes, we thank our one listener.
Camera connection kit and a USB mic there, Professor.
But yes, if you have any comments about the show tonight, you can call 615-280-0505.
He's in love
with
his
sound
phone.
Effects. That was great radio, guys.
You like that? You like
He's
that?
In love with that phone sounder. It's amazing.
I love this. So, but yes, I have sound effects all over the place. But so let's move on to our consuming segment. Since the voicemail is done, thank you, 50% of our audience for calling in. I say that's a high. What do you guys think?
I got a good buzz going.
It's certainly the most feedback we've gotten to this point. You know, we're hearing from half our audience.
You can also leave an email at us, comments@nashvillefeed.com, where we will read those emails, which we have gotten zero, but we're working on.
Excellent. So all right, the streak continues.
Yes, the streak of zero continues. So our consuming segment is here. And so let's just go round the table figuratively. Craig, why don't we start with you? What are you consuming lately?
Well, I usually try to start with the books I'm reading, but I've been so slammed. No books going on right now. I need a good one. I need a good summertime novel. So I recently painted a bedroom, and that's the best time to listen to music ever. So I have been loving the recent album by the amazing Courtney J, The Exotic Sounds of Courtney J. I recommend it highly enough. Tim O'Brien's new album, Chicken and Egg, is spectacular, as he usually is. And I've been loving the not-yet-released album by Shannon Whitworth, an eponymous debut. She is just something else. So those I would highly recommend. And in terms of my video consumption, I realized I haven't really seen any movies or anything. But waiting for me on the DVR is the British Grand Prix. From yesterday, we had company and I wasn't able to watch it. So that's my activity for the evening. And I just want to put a shout out that the geeks of the world need to tune in to Formula One Grand Prix racing. Everybody who tells me they're surprised I'm a racing fan thinks I'm a NASCAR fan. This is nothing of the sort. This is right. Lifestyles of the Rich and Famous meets Star Wars, meets Minority Report, meets a supermodel convention or something. It's very sexy, and I can't recommend it enough.
I'll have to give it a try. Is it on BBC America?
It is on the Speed Network.
Check your local listings.
Usually you get to see qualifying on Saturday and the race on Sunday, and they come from all kinds of exotic locations like Singapore and Belgium and Abu Dhabi.
Very cool. Very cool.
And it's the state of the art.
Absolutely. Paul, what are you consuming?
Well, I have been introduced in the last couple of weeks to an author named Clay Shirky, who has a new book called Cognitive Surplus. Now, Clay Shirky's been around for a while, but he's only just in the last couple of weeks shown up on my radar. And his new book, talks about how technology is changing us from consumers into collaborators, and just providing the means by which we are no longer sitting in front of our TV sets and consuming stuff. He actually makes the point somewhere that the amount of time that went into making Wikipedia amounted to like 1% of the world's TV viewing time. Wow. So he's somebody who's got a very high altitude view on the impact that technology is having on culture and society. So I've just availed myself to that book, and there's a link in the show notes to his TED Talk, recent TED Talk about his new book, which is called Cognitive Surplus. And I've just downloaded the audio version of that so I can start listening to it.
On audible.com?
In terms of just the way I'm consuming stuff, there's been a big shift in the house here. Our listening room, sitting room, FM CD player kind of went out, and rather than replacing it with a similar unit, we got ourselves the Griffin Evolve.
Oh, I've been using that one.
David are very familiar with, and suddenly a nearly cast off iPhone 3G. Has become the focus of our home entertainment in that particular situation. So I'm now using Pandora and RDO and the NPR app and something called Spark Radio, and I've got the XM Radio app, and I've got all of them on this iPhone, and that's what we're now using as our music sources instead of on-the-air radio in the room where we listen to music a lot. And my latest discovery, I'm way behind the curve on this one, but after hearing him on a WPLN Live from Studio C broadcast, I have become very enamored of Victor Krause.
Oh, yeah.
And I listen to a lot more instrumental kind of music than I do vocal stuff, because I'm usually reading or writing and I can't have two verbal inputs at the same time. And Victor's instrumental stuff it's very intricate, very inventive, and I'm finding it over and over again very enjoyable. So that's what I'm listening to. Nothing in the way of television. We're in a lull here. There really hasn't been anything that's really captured my imagination. Although I did try to watch a recent episode of the series called Warehouse 13. Which I like only because it has a device in it that's called the Farnsworth, which is in fact named after the man about who my book is about. And then technologically, I'm having fun with Words with Friends, the Scrabble game on my iPad, and I think I'm about to win my first game. So,
well, nice. I'll have to say the Griffin Tech Evolve, which is wireless speaker system, amazing. Sad thing is that wasn't a big seller, so they are discontinued. They are no longer making them, but if you can pick one up for a fairly good price right now, I highly recommend it to anybody. I've been using one for about 2 years now, and I love mine.
It's great. The sound from the speakers is outstanding, and you can pick them up and just cart them into any room in the house.
And the only thing I wish I could have got when they were making them is actually made remote battery power stands. So that you could plug it in another room, because once those batteries die, I'm going to be very, very sad.
Ooh. Well, it'll be something else by then.
Hopefully. Moving right along, Lucas, what are you consuming?
Well, I am forever trying to dig myself out of the various holes I've made myself into in the work world. But in trying to do that as well, trying to keep up with reading fairly timely books. I don't know if any of you have seen Greg Kot's book called Ripped, How the Wired Generation Revolutionized Music. Greg Kot, one of the pop music critics for the Chicago Tribune, great newspaper writer, and I'm looking forward to, I haven't gotten into it yet, but he had a very highly acclaimed biography on the band Wilco. And this is kind of a capsule look of as the back cover copy talks about how we went from $17.99 to $0 in less than a decade. A fascinating tale of backward thinking, forward thinking, and the power of music. So, you know, again, we tend to, you know, see the end result of all this. I think for me, and hopefully I can report back to others, that this might be a nice little capsule look at how we got here over the past decade or so. As far as audio and or video content, I've been watching and listening to the Dan Patrick Show, the morning radio version of the longtime now former ESPN SportsCenter anchors now radio show that he has both on stations around the country, but also the video side of it they're doing on DirecTV Channel 101. It's a great hybrid of you know, obviously sports and pop culture and TV kind of talk, but also the way that they've merged those two worlds. They've actually been able to make a radio show on TV fairly interesting. So if you're a sports fan and like me, you're just trying to kind of cleanse the mental palate from the musical side of the component of radio, I highly recommend the Dan Patrick Show.
Excellent. Well,
nobody mentioned the World Cup or the Double Rainbow guy.
Double Rainbow Man, it's so beautiful!
Which was my favorite internet meme of the year so far.
I remember seeing, you know, like 3 or 4 years ago, we had a double rainbow here. And I remember feeling fairly, you know, overawed by it, but not to that extent.
Yeah, well, I lived in Hawaii for 14 years. I saw double rainbows every day.
Best quote I've seen from that was, "What is that guy on? And I want to be on it." So, if you have a chance, check YouTube for all the responses. They're just as hysterical. One is search for double rainbow cereal, where a guy's like in his Lucky Charms, and he's like, "Rainbow, double rainbow! Oh my god!"
Well, the quartet that did the musical version with the auto tune slayed me.
Oh, I've man. Seen that. That
was that was youth brains and wet work. Brilliant.
Somebody give them a radio or a deal. all right, well, I'll finish up with what I'm consuming, because I consume as well. A book I just finished called Predictably Irrational, revised and expanded edition I just got, and it's The Hidden Forces That Shape Our Decisions. And it's really about a combination of psychology and economics, that not necessarily the things that you think that influence economics are really the things that influence them. It's very much in the same vein as Freakonomics, which I just finished as well. The author is Dan Ariely. I believe that's how you pronounce it. Sorry, Dan, if I brutalized it. But it's a fascinating book. If you like psychology and economics, or one of the either, this book will blow your mind. And the video I'm consuming, Warehouse 13, of course, with the Farnsworth. And Netflix on my iPad. Man, I love that, because there's just so many good shows on there now, especially since they made a bunch of new deals. So I look forward to more stuff there. Well, that wraps up the show tonight, guys.
I'm amazed any of us have time to consume anything.
Well, we're actually producing now, too. We're yes. producers and consumers.
Collaborating.
So, yes.
With our cognitive surplus.
Let me finish up real quick here. Nashville Tech Feed is part of the Tech Podcast Network. Go to techpodcast.com/Nashville Tech Feed. And comments at NashvilleFeed.com and NashvilleTechFeed.com for all show notes that we talk about things and stuff we probably don't talk about. Voicemail, 615-280-0505. And Craig, how can we find you online?
StringTheoryMedia.com. Please come and visit.
Excellent. I highly recommend blog. If anybody loves music and the business side of music, I highly recommend it. It's an excellent read every time.
You're very kind.
Paul Schatzkin, where can we find you online?
These days I am keeping track of things at cohesionarts.com.
Excellent.
If you want some acerbic commentary, that's a place to go.
And another excellent blog, highly recommended to everybody listening. And Lucas, where can we find you?
Largelandmammal.com. As well as online on Twitter, It's Tune In Lucas. And we keep neglecting to mention the show's Twitter feed.
Yes.
At Nashville Feed.
Correct. Which we'll post things, and I'll let you know when I'm editing and posting and being frustrated and stuff such as that. I'm David Baranja. You can find me at NashvilleTechFeed.com. And I go by MDave on Twitter. And that's a wrap, guys. Guess what? I get to play an audio clip, and 50% of our audience that got the question right of what sound clip it was said, roll it back into the show. So next week, it will be a $10 iTunes gift certificate for somebody that identifies the last part of the song. The contingency is, though, you can't be a host on the show. And you have to call in and leave what the clip was from. So you can't email. You have to call the voicemail, which is 615-280-0505. And with that, Lucas, how are we going to end the show?
With something that somebody's going to win $10 iTunes card on. I have no clue. Okay. I never do.
And here we go.
I'm just sick of all the amateur stuff, you know? I mean, like, if I'm paying top dollar, I want a little production value, you know? Like some editing, transition, something, some music.
Yeah, you know, well, I'm sorry, Evan, that the Coen brothers don't direct the porn that I watch. They're hard to get a hold of, okay?